metrics and engagement tools. And we are happy to be here today. For those of you who are not familiar with Measure Evaluation, we are a USAID-funded project supporting improvements in monitoring and evaluation in population health and nutrition worldwide. And like I said, the data demand in use, we have a series of tools that are available, and we're doing a webinar series. For the previous two, the recordings are available online at our website, which I'll show you later. And we'll just go ahead and get started now with our third one, our tips. Tara Nutley is our Senior Technical Specialist for Data Demand and Use with Measure Evaluation, and she'll be giving us a brief overview of data demand and use and what we mean by that and some common terminology. I'll be doing a presentation of our stakeholder tools, and I, again, am Molly Cannon, an M&E specialist with Measure Evaluation. And then Drew Kalais is joining us from London. He's a program advisor with Measure Evaluation, and he'll be talking specifically about some field application of the tools. We'll have an opportunity for questions and answers, and then we'll wrap up. So I'd like to go ahead and pass it over to Tara Nutley.
Hello, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here. It's also very exciting to see so many people in the webinar environment here today. We are really excited to talk about our tools and welcome you to the webinar series. Before we get into the details of the tool, I find it important to just kind of remind us why we are all here talking about improving data demand and use as a way to kind of set the stage for this morning's conversation. So we're all aware of the challenges involved in providing quality health services in the context where we work. In many of the countries where we're working or the programs that we're supporting, we're witnessing a high disease burden, a growing population, inadequate numbers, and poor distribution of qualified health workers, and frequently inadequate health systems to support the distribution of services. So it's in this situation that it really becomes extremely important for us to make the best use of the resources that we have. And in many places, these resources are very limited. So the need to develop strategies, policies, and interventions that are based on quality data and information is more important than ever. This really allows us to target our programming. I like to start also with this quote from a colleague, someone we worked with in Nigeria. He was a national level policymaker, because he sums up kind of the crux of why we're here very nicely. He said, "Without information, things are done arbitrarily, and one becomes unaware of whether a policy or program will fail or succeed. If we allow our policies to be guided by empirical facts and data, there will be a noticeable change in the impact of what we do." I also like to just quickly clarify what we mean by data demand and use. What we frequently see is that data is used to populate reports that are then fed up through the health system to either the national level or a donor or an NGO sort of headquarters. What we don't see so much is that data used in a decision-making process. And decision-making is a process. It's not a one-time event. And data can be used to either monitor a program, to decide if a decision to do something different even needs to be made, to create or revise a program or strategic plan, to develop or revise a policy, to advocate for a policy or program, or to allocate resources. And when we talk about data demand, we talk about the decision-making cycle continuing seamlessly, so that decision-makers specify what kind of information they need to those that are collecting it, and then they actively seek it out to inform that decision-making process. So we're talking about going beyond reporting, going beyond simply dissemination, and actively using data in decision-making. This graphic you see here is the Measure Evaluation cycle of data-informed decision-making. When we talk about improving the use of and demand for data in decision-making, we talk about this cycle and it not being a one-time event. The idea of a cycle of evidence-based decision-making starts with basic M&E improvements around data collection and collecting quality information, and then making sure that information is available and kind of synthesized and translated into formats that are easily understood by the different types of decision makers, and then that information being interpreted and used in the improvement of programs and policies. And this cycle supports the assumption that positive experiences that decision makers have with using data, the stronger their commitment will be to improving data collection systems and continuing to use the information they generate. So you see then the arrow leading from utilization down to demand and back up to collection and continuing the cycle. And you also note that the cycle is supported by coordination and collaboration in the orange circle there. This coordination is among data users and data producers. And data users and data producers is a term we use to talk about those that generate the data and those that use the data in decision making. Sometimes these are the same individual, oftentimes they are not, and they don't communicate very often or very well. And we also note here in the orange circle that there is this synergy between the organizational supports that facilitate and support data-informed decision making, which is also represented by capacity building. We obviously need to make sure that our health professionals are equipped with the skills to collect and use data. So the evidence, the data-informed decision making cycle is one that requires multiple inputs, it's a bit complex, and as a result, these types of things, we often see there are breakdowns in the cycle. So when we talk about data-informed decision making, how do we do that? Firstly, we build upon a commitment of ongoing efforts to improve monitoring and evaluation and information systems, as you see here in kind of the supporting part of this conceptual framework. This is the foundation for all data use improvement interventions. There has to be this commitment. Then we talk about identifying and engaging data users and data producers, as I mentioned earlier. These two groups really need to function and function synergistically so that data needs are understood and the data that exists is also understood by both parties. It's also important to apply tools, build capacity, and strengthen organizational systems to support data-informed decision-making, as you see in the three boxes. And in this webinar series, we'll be talking about the application of those different types of interventions. But I just wanted to show this, this conceptual framework, because while we're going to focus on applying tools in this webinar series, it's really not the only component of improving data-informed decision-making. You really need more of a comprehensive approach. So that's a quick overview of kind of how we think about data demand and use. And now Molly will continue on with the specifics around the stakeholder tools.
Thank you, Tara. I'm going to go ahead, and before we get into the specifics and details of the tool, I'd like to review some terminology about stakeholders to ensure we're all on the same page. I think stakeholder is a term that many of us are familiar with and use, but we want to make sure we're thinking about it in a comprehensive way. A stakeholder is anyone who has a stake or interest in your program. And the most often ones we usually think about are government agencies, policymakers, funding agencies, and even implementers or providers as stakeholders. Some of the ones we think about maybe a little less often are the actual beneficiaries of our health programs. And the people that our programs and services strive to serve make decisions about seeking services and continuing to seek care. It's really important that we consider these stakeholders when we're designing and implementing any kind of program or service. Tara's also talked a lot about data users and data producers and how important it is to bring those two groups of people to the table when we're talking about any kind of data and decision making. Often the data users are stakeholders, you know, that we think of like the government agencies and funders that we already talked about. But as you can see here, we include in our list that data producers also play a key role in decision making. And the last two at the bottom illustrate that, researchers and M&E specialists. So we need to be sure that we're including all of these different stakeholder groups. So I want to briefly go over the following diagram, which helps depict the context of decision making. So you can see there are three elements that are critical to making a decision. We need data, there have to be decisions that are made based on those data, and then the involvement of stakeholders. We're going to primarily focus on the role of stakeholders. Large amounts of money and effort are put forth to collecting data from health facilities, communities, and populations. And therefore, we really want to maximize the impact of the data for that real-world benefit. And this is where the involvement of the stakeholders becomes important. We're operating from the perspective that users of data need to value what has been collected and analyzed. And then when those data are seen as useful and valuable, it's more likely to be owned by those who need it, and then they will then use it to make decisions. So that's a really important assumption that we're operating from here with data demand and use. So this next slide, we want to talk about some of the reasons it's important to recognize that different stakeholders will affect data deformed in decision-making in different ways. So a lot of times when people engage stakeholders, they may think about you know, who they already know, who are the people who are easy to talk to. It's sort of done in an ad hoc way, and you just generate a list of people. But it's not really done in a systematic way. And this is where our tools that have been created for measure evaluation come into play. We really promote approaching stakeholder analysis and engagement in a systematic way, and we'll go over those specifically. If you don't do this and you just use it in an ad hoc manner, some of the things that can happen is sometimes only the data producers are included, or only those stakeholders who are in agreement with your proposed plan are invited to participate. Stakeholders may be selected only from an organization that's directly involved in the project. Stakeholders might be invited, this often happens, to a preliminary briefing to get initial engagement, but they're not actually engaged throughout the process. And that stakeholders included in the project may be somebody you know or value, but they really might not be at the appropriate level to help inform the decision-making process. So you may say, well, we had 10 different stakeholders at the table, but at the end of the day, when your data are ready to be used, you may not have the adequate support you need because you didn't have a comprehensive group of stakeholders. So when these kind of conditions exist, in many cases, the M&E project or system might suffer. And here's a couple of examples we just want to highlight of things that have happened when proper stakeholder engagement has not occurred. In a country in Africa, the national government did not support findings of a new demographic and health survey because they were not involved in the process. In addition, the results that came from that survey conflicted with other indicators and data sources that had cited similar information. Since they weren't involved in the process, they didn't see the value of the new data, didn't take any ownership in that data, and thus not only did they not use it, but they did not support its use. And that's a really important category of stakeholder to include when you're doing any kind of research study or M&E work. You know, are the people who can actually help support and lift your findings up and disseminate them throughout a country or throughout a program. Another example we have is more at the facility level. Our clinic staff who collect M&E data for a system didn't really see what purpose they had in being tasked to do. As we know, a lot of people at the facility level fill out forms and they feed them up. So in this case, they didn't really understand the value of their role in that and didn't pay as much detail to actually the data quality and how they were filling out the forms. We propose that if they had been engaged early on as a stakeholder and really understood their role in the larger context of the health information change, that those staff members might have had more incentive to pay attention to the detail that might have produced higher quality data. So those are just a couple of different examples of, you know, why you really need to think broadly and take a systematic approach toward identifying your stakeholders. I think the thing that's in common in those examples is that there's a very strong relationship between ownership, data quality, data relevance, and data use. And this point is going to reiterate some of the things we talked about, but I think it's important to say people are more likely to use data in their decision making if they've been involved from the beginning, they believe the data are of high quality, and they feel the specific data addresses their priorities. Engaging them early and systematically in the process enables that the right questions are going to be asked in the right way and define data activities that will generate quality information that can be used. So we need to keep those points in mind. And sometimes it's not easy. You know, we don't necessarily want to invite somebody to the table if we know they're going to disagree with us. I've had that happen to me many times, and it's more challenging because it takes more time and more work to collaborate. But in the end, you're bringing all the people together on board and getting multiple perspectives so that it's more likely that the data will be used at the end of the project. So now I'm going to go into detail about our two different tools we have really around stakeholders. One is a stakeholder analysis matrix, and the other is a stakeholder engagement plan. And the purpose is to ensure that data initiatives reflect the needs and values of our relevant stakeholders to support data use and decision making. And we want to, essentially, the first step is to identify all our relevant stakeholders involved in the process and then determine appropriate strategies for engaging with those stakeholders. So here's the general process. You identify the need. So, you know, what exactly is your need? Are you working on an overall comprehensive M&E system? Are you looking to collect additional data based on a certain programmatic area? You need to sort of define what it is that you need to engage stakeholders for. Then you would go through the stakeholder analysis matrix, which I'm going to show you in a minute. You will set the optimum stakeholder group. It's important to remember, we take you through a very comprehensive process for identifying stakeholders. That does not mean that you need to engage every single stakeholder every step of the way. That would really slow your work down and might not be the most productive way. But what you would do is first be very comprehensive in identifying them and then go through a process where you figure out who is your core group of stakeholders and who do you need to engage with at what point throughout your research or M&E process. And then after you've done that, you would create a stakeholder engagement plan, which sort of outlines the way forward for how you're going to work with them and what their roles and responsibilities will be. And the nice thing about this plan is that it allows you to track the stakeholder engagement throughout the project. So the stakeholder analysis matrix, it's a framework and process that you would use at the start of a project for planning purposes. And again, it would help you identify the individuals and groups that are stakeholders in an M&E or data use activity, either as contributors, influencers, or beneficiaries. And the tool provides a structured way to define the roles that stakeholders play in the activity and assess the resources they could bring to bear. It also provides a framework for assessing the interests, knowledge, positions, resources, power, et cetera, of all these various stakeholders. Who are the people who will resist your work? Who are going to support it? And what are the reasons behind that? The tool helps to assess which stakeholders to include in the process by determining the relative priority of stakeholders. Which stakeholders have the highest priority? You know, it could be those who are funding the project. It could be those who are most likely to use the project for policy or the programmatic people who would make changes to the program based on what you find. So ultimately, you need people in all of these categories as your stakeholders, those who need to use the data, and ask them what questions are they seeking to answer. You want to find people who have influence and resources who can help your project. You want to get those involved who've been directly or indirectly affected by the outcome of the initiative, for example, the beneficiaries. You want those who can support your plan. And you want individuals to be thinking about, and you thinking about, how they're going to contribute to the process. So let's go ahead and take a look at our stakeholder analysis matrix. It's a lot to look at, but I have some red circles that are going to help you in a minute. So essentially, it's just a matrix. And what we've done is there are columns along the top, and then you see the different rows. And what the rows represent, for example, I'm going to use my arrow. We've just categorized them to help you think through. You know, you want to mention who the government stakeholders might be. Are there certain political groups that you need to involve as stakeholders? Who are various commercial stakeholders? Are there different NGOs who should be involved as stakeholders? Those involved in civil society, who you might want to consider, and then, of course, international donors. I went through a stakeholder analysis matrix for a project where not all of these categories were necessarily relevant, and we actually added some different ones. I was using it in an academic environment. So it's okay to modify and change these. This is just a template for you to use. At the top, I'm going to take away my arrow here. And at the top, you can see we have, I don't know why this isn't working. I'm going to use my pointer here instead of my circles. You would have the name of the stakeholder, organization, group, or individual. In some cases, it might actually be, NACA, the National AIDS Control Agency, or it might be a specific person who you know is really influential or powerful. So you would list that person in the first column. Then you would put a description. You know, what is that person's primary purpose or the organization's purpose, their affiliation, and their funding source? What is their potential role in the issue or the activity? What's their level of knowledge of the issue at hand? Some might have a very peripheral, like a policymaker might not be intimately involved in the details, but certainly, you know, they're the ones who push the policy agenda forward. So you would highlight those types of issues. What would be their level of commitment? You know, would they support or oppose the activity? To what extent and why? And what might their available resources be, either staffing, money, technology, information, or influence that they have? And obviously, this could go on for several pages, depending on the size and scope of your project. There go my circles now. Sorry. Okay. So here's an example just for one category for government. So at the top, you can see the program issue is to develop a plan, including, you know, the M&E plan, to scale up PMTCT programs throughout the system. The proposed activity is to convene stakeholders to identify priorities based on available data and develop an action plan. And this is for November 2006 in this case. So the name of the stakeholder organization here under government is the National AIDS Control Committee. And the description is that they're involved in planning, implementation, M&E of all HIV/AIDS programs in the country. They approve donor and NGO-funded HIV/AIDS programs. And their potential role is that they facilitate the stakeholder meeting. They'll prepare for the meeting by identifying data sources and preparing an agenda. And they have a high level of knowledge around the issue because they receive reports on PMTCT from MCH division at the Ministry of Health, and they have medium level of knowledge of international guidelines and studies. Their level of commitment in this case is that they strongly support the activity, but they're hesitant to use international data sources. They oppose the use of DHS and most recent international estimates as it considers these sources to overestimate HIV prevalence. So you can see here in this example how you're putting out what some of the benefits are, but also what some potential hindrances are, so that you're stating them up front and figuring out ways that you might be able to work with them and through them. And they have staff available to facilitate. They have room and computers available for meetings at their headquarters. So our next tool, so that first tool is that analysis matrix. You would go through all the different categories, and then you would set the optimum group. And we don't have specific guidance for what exactly is the optimum group. It's going to depend on your specific situation. And I think Drew, when he talks about his examples in the field, could really shed some light on how he maybe identified a core group of stakeholders and how to decide which ones to include at what point. You certainly run into trouble if you try to engage everyone all of the time because they're busy people with challenging schedules and they may not always be able to work in your time frame. And also, they may not be the best people to give you the technical input, for example, on designing your system. So there is a lot of thought and consideration that we'll need to go into when do you engage them and how frequently. The stakeholder engagement plan is the second tool, and that provides a platform for following up and tracking stakeholders. You would use this during project implementation and follow-up phases. So here is the stakeholder engagement plan. And again, at the top, you would see, you know, you would write out what your program issue is, the proposed activity, and the date. So those would be the same as what you wrote on your stakeholder analysis matrix. Again, you see the rows are the same. You know, who are the stakeholders from government, political, commercial, NGO, other civil society, and international NGOs. And then you would have at the top what that stakeholder organization, group, or individual is, and list it. What's their potential role in the activity? What is your engagement strategy? So how are you going to engage the stakeholder in this activity? For example, are you going to invite them to a meeting? Are you going to ask them to review draft documents that you produce, your M&E plan, or data collection plans, or your data analysis strategy? Those are things you need to really think through in terms of who are the appropriate people to do those things. And then what is your follow-up strategy, your plans for feedback or continued involvement? And the people who are listed in the stakeholder engagement plan may not be all the same ones from the stakeholder analysis matrix. I see the stakeholder analysis matrix as broader, and then you would refine it once you get to your core groups and people to list in your stakeholder engagement plan. So here's again an example of the National AIDS Control Committee. And we already know what their potential role was. We said earlier in the analysis matrix that they would facilitate the stakeholder meeting. The engagement strategy that we'll talk about here is that they're going to be the lead in the activity, and it's going to be important for them to involve more specifically the PMTCT coordinator, clinical care coordinator, and National AIDS Program coordinator. So this is really nice. This lays out what is the specific thing that they will be doing in that they're going to lead the activity, and that's clearly stated. And then the follow-up strategy is that they're responsible for following up with the prioritized stakeholders. So in this example, you can see the National AIDS Control Committee is taking a very strong lead in working with stakeholders. This may not always be the case. It just depends on what your program issue and your proposed activities are. So I just want to mention, we've already sort of gone over a lot of these guiding principles, that ownership of data fosters use, that the engagement will improve relevance of data, and you need a diversity of perspectives when you're working with stakeholders and trying to develop M&E plans or research activities. And that it's important to recognize what the differing roles of those stakeholder groups and individuals are. And you want to engage them throughout the whole process, from design to follow-up. I think this is really an area where people see problems, is they're just invited to an initial kickoff meeting, but they're not actively engaged throughout. And then these last four bullets really highlight what are some of the challenges or the downsides to stakeholders that you're going to need to manage throughout the process, that there are unintended effects of stakeholder engagement. The more stakeholders you have, it is likely it could slow down your process. You have to build in time to work with them and to address their differing needs and interests. The more stakeholders who are involved, there could be greater complexities of your design, your research design or your project design. A large stakeholder group might stimulate excessive expectations. That's where budgeting is going to be important and being really upfront from the get-go about how much funding you have to complete this activity. And yes, these are all really great ideas, but what can you handle at this moment and what can you table for a later date in terms of what you want to include in your activity? The transparency aspect, I mean, that's a good thing, right? We want our work to be transparent. But then, with this wider audience, it also means you're going to have more accountability from your end. And that's good, but you just need to sort of be aware that that's one of the things that happens as you engage more stakeholders. But again, all of the downsides to it, and the fact that it can slow you down, it can be more challenging, will lead, though, to greater successes in the end, because you'll have more people who feel buy-in and ownership for the data and eventually using your data. So I want to go on now and introduce Drew Kaleros, who's a program advisor with Measure Evaluation, and he's going to talk about some field experiences he's had in using our stakeholder tools. So Drew, if you're there, you want to go ahead and take over?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Molly. All right, so I think that Molly's gone through a great overview of the different tools and sort of the theory of the process, and I'd just like to take you through a few examples of how I've used this in my work, both with Measure Evaluation and other projects that I've worked on. So again, I've really seen the stakeholder engagement process as a key step in the planning process, and I'd like to give you an example of how I've used it in strategic planning in Rwanda and in planning a research study in Cote d'Ivoire. And then also it's also really important and an essential step to the dissemination of any actual results. Sometimes through a research study, for instance, you obtain results that you didn't expect, and there's a different group of stakeholders that would want to be engaged based on those results. So I'd like to give you an example of a triangulation activity that we did in Rwanda and how we use a stakeholder engagement plan there, and then also some to come up with a strategy for dissemination of some communication materials as well. And I would like to say that I put a few resource documents together that I believe are available to you. And by the end of this, I'll just ask Molly quickly to let all the participants know how they can access those. But in Rwanda right now, we're actually going through a midterm review of their national strategic plan for 2009 through 2012. And we started off with working with the National AIDS Control Commission to develop the terms of reference for what they wanted to review in the midterm review of this plan based on the entire national strategy. So we used a combination of these different tools to understand all of the different stakeholders that were available. We looked at the investment that they were making, both their financial investment into the plan and technical investment into the implementation of the plan. And we also looked at the different time constraints and the time availability that all the different stakeholders had to be part of and participate in this process. So going through the stakeholder engagement process, we were able to identify a large group of stakeholders that we considered the data users, the end users of the plan that we hoped would use the results for changing the next 2 years of implementation of this national strategy, and also some recommendations for developing the next strategic plan, which will be 2013 through 17. Within this larger group of stakeholders, based on people's time, availability, and commitment, we identified a key group of people that would follow this process from the beginning through the end, and they are now comprised of a joint review steering committee. So in December 2011, this joint review steering committee met in Kigali and again went through another stakeholder engagement activity to understand how all of the different users at all of the different levels intend to use the results. They use that exercise to develop the purpose and the specific objectives of their overall joint review, of this midterm review, and then also to decide the expected results and specifically the products. What do they want the final products to look like to facilitate use? And there's an example of the terms of reference from that that's available to you. Next, I'd like to give an example of how we use this to plan a research study in Cote d'Ivoire. The government of Cote d'Ivoire and the U.S. government are interested in understanding the unit cost of reaching sex workers and men who have sex with men with their comprehensive minimum package of services reaching those key populations. So during a large stakeholder workshop that was organized in actually earlier this month in January, we used a combination of the stakeholder engagement tools and the stakeholder analysis matrix to fix the scope of our research study to understand what exactly were the different activities that we would be included in our research study. So again, when you bring a bunch of researchers and scientists together, we're all naturally curious. Everything sounds interesting, and we have a tendency to want to collect more than we need to. So we use this process to help hone in and limit what we included in the scope of this overall study. In addition, by going through the different ways that we thought these stakeholders would use the results of the study, we realized that the major ways that the stakeholders wanted to use the results was for budgeting and planning purposes. So that helped us understand the perspective that the study would take. For instance, that we didn't need to do a comprehensive economic perspective study, collecting all of the costs, including opportunity and financial costs for delivering HIV services, but we could focus in on the financial costs, because that was what was important to all of our stakeholders in terms of budgeting and planning purposes. And lastly, by going through the stakeholder analysis process, we realized that we actually had a very finite timing to do this study. results needed to be available for the national operational plan for the government of Cote d'Ivoire. They needed those results by a specific time, and that had an impact on the rest of the methodology that we chose. So by going through this comprehensive stakeholder analysis process and figuring out how they would be engaged in the process, we were able to decide on the best scope of our study and also to plan timing. Now, that's how we've used the stakeholder engagement and analysis exercises and process in the planning phase to ensure that our results are the most usable as possible for all of the different stakeholders. I'd like to give you an example now of how we've used stakeholder analysis exercises in understanding how to disseminate or results that we didn't anticipate. For instance, in 2008, the government of Rwanda, the National AIDS Control Commission, and the Ministry of Health conducted a comprehensive HIV data triangulation exercise in Rwanda. We had different questions. We wanted to understand what was driving new infections in Rwanda and what were the policy implications of what we found. So going through that process and focusing on some of the key populations in Rwanda, one of the interesting findings was that there was an HIV prevalence rate coming out of our VCT data of 34% among young women in this under 25 in this certain area, Gikondo Transit Camp. This was an unanticipated and unexpected result that nobody was expecting when we started the activity. So we went back to our stakeholder engagement process and we said, well, this is something that needs urgent action. Let's go through the process again and decide who are the different stakeholders that need to know this information. What's our recommendation for them? How are we going to get the information that they need? What's the timeline on when we're going to do this? And then how will we know that their engagement in this process has happened? So for instance here, just to take the top example, program managers and HIV implementing partners were identified as one key stakeholder, and we wanted to recommend that they implement some targeted HIV prevention programs, at this camp to make sure that these young women have adequate HIV knowledge and access to prevention commodities such as condoms. We decided that we would do a national dissemination workshop and invite all those key players to let them know these results. We scheduled that for a certain date, and we said that we would come back to this after a certain time. If we can confirm that those programs are in place in the camp, then we knew that our process worked. And then lastly, we've used it for some communication materials as well. Now, arguably, we could say that, not arguably, but for sure, we should say that in planning any communication materials, stakeholder analysis at the beginning to understand and to target the materials is key. But just to give you an example of this, was another activity in Rwanda that we used for an HIV update with the monitoring and evaluation unit of the National AIDS Control Commission, including some of the district level AIDS committee members. So we came up with this little brochure. This is a PowerPoint slide showing you the front and back of the brochure. Here is the inside, just on a PowerPoint slide. But this was disseminating some results from 2007 national HIV response. So going through a process, the National M&E unit decided that they wanted to highlight some specific results across prevention, care and treatment, and the programs for orphans and vulnerable children. After going through this process, each of the districts received the product themselves, a stack of, I think, 100 or 150 brochures, and then went through all of the different stakeholder groups that they thought needed to see this information, and then again went through that process of deciding how and when they would disseminate that and what would be the how would they assess the impact of that dissemination and follow that through. So I believe that's all I put together. I'm going to pass it back to Molly, and then again, there's a few different resources and examples that I have on this process and how we've used them in some different products that are available to you. So thank you.
So much, Drew. I really liked his examples. He had some different ways of how they've adapted some of our materials to engage stakeholders at different points in the process. For example, when they had unexpected findings. and going through that process. And you'll have a moment in a minute. We'll take some questions and answers. I just want to remind you, you know, we have a website here, www.measureevaluation.org/DDU, where you can find all of our different tools, including the tools we talked about today on stakeholder engagement. And as Tara went over in the very beginning, sort of with her hamburger kind of diagram, we sort of encourage a comprehensive approach toward using our tools. So you wouldn't just use stakeholder engagement tool. It can be used in conjunction with the other tools. For example, if you're going to use the information use mapping tool, you certainly want to go through a process of identifying stakeholders for who would be involved at that information use mapping exercise. So these can work in conjunction with each other. So specific to this actual tool, when you go to our website, you'll see, excuse me, for all of our tools, there's instructions for use. You'll see the stakeholder analysis matrix and engagement templates, the specific field application written up and examples completed, as well as an implementation checklist. So now we want to open it up for questions and answers. And there's two ways for you to participate. In a minute, your screen is going to, I think, change, and there will be a Q&A pod. You have an opportunity to type in a question, which we will see, and then we'll take the questions. And the question can be either for Drew, myself, or for Tara. And I will go ahead and point the questions to the right people. You may also raise your hand if you feel you have adequate audio. And you can go up to the top of the screen where the microphone is and click on that. So we'll give you all a few minutes to get some questions going, and then we'll answer them. And while you're typing, as Drew mentioned, we have his resources as well as some other resources. I believe on your screen you should have a little pod or a box that says web resources, where it talks about our data use network, a more specific link for data demand and use, and our measure evaluation website and stakeholder engagement tool. And then there's also three different examples that Drew provided about how sort of products that came out of his work with stakeholders. Okay, so we have our first question listed. I will go ahead and respond so everyone can see the question. Olga writes in, can you please tell us again where we can find the previous presentations that were recorded? If you go to the measure evaluation website, there's a menu bar at the top that says Our Work, and you can click on Data Demand and Use, and you'll see a link to the 7-part webinar series, and that's where you can find links. There should be a link that says Recording under each of the different webinars. Any other questions? Okay, here we go. Felicia Thomas, what is the most effective way to solicit government support for your project? I think Tara Nutley will go ahead and take this.
Gee, Felicia, that's a really good question. And, you know, obviously this is really a context-specific question. You know, since we're sitting here talking about stakeholder involvement, there really is a linkage between involvement and ownership. So it is, I would say, through a careful planning process like the one we've identified here, where you can really begin to engage those government counterparts to explain what you're trying to do, to discuss what their specific needs are, what their expectations are around what you're trying to do. I know it's not always that easy, and I'd like to, you know, kind of say that up front as well. But we've really had some success with this type of tool in kind of hearing everybody's voice and planning a way forward around particularly sticky situations. So I hope that is a helpful answer.
Thanks, Tara. We have another question from Derek, and he writes in, would it not make sense to split the stakeholders into two sections, direct and indirect? I think that's a really good question, and as we mentioned, our tools are adaptable. So you could certainly do that. I assume you're meaning here those who are directly involved in the activity and those who may be indirectly involved, let's say beneficiaries, for example. So you could certainly set it up that way. I would just encourage you to make sure that you're comprehensive in including those and really figuring out what are the most appropriate roles for those different types of stakeholders. And Tara wants to add something as well.
That's a really, Derek, it's an interesting way of thinking about your stakeholders. I find one of the most critical moments in the stakeholder analysis is identifying who, like even identifying the groupings that you start to brainstorm stakeholders around. So, for example, I think the example Molly showed had government, non-government, NGO, whatever the other ones were. One of the main reasons why this tool is so useful is because it forces you to think beyond what we call the usual suspects. If you're implementing a health intervention, for example, obviously you'll involve the Ministry of Health, some NGOs, some policymakers. But what we want to do is push beyond that, go beyond, if it's a community health intervention, who are the community leaders? Potentially, who are the religious leaders if it's, say, a family planning intervention? So when you're coming up with those groupings, using direct and indirect as a construct might be a very helpful way to expand beyond that kind of the normal stakeholder group.
Thanks, Tara. Next, we'll go to a question from Maria, and I think Drew is going to take this question. Maria says, many thanks for the opportunity to interact and learn from you. What is the time frame for undertaking stakeholder analysis? Drew, do you want to go ahead and answer that based on your experience?
That. Just to quickly respond, in my experience, everything that I've done, it has not been an extremely time-consuming or lengthy process. It's usually taken 2 or 3 hours in a meeting or a workshop setting. So as a facilitator yourself, it takes some time to put together the materials and get everybody on board. You might want to come up with some templates or some instructions. But other than that, it's usually been done in group work and people share it together, comment on it, and then come up with a final list together. So it doesn't have to be a lengthy or time-consuming process.
Thanks, Drew. Kolawole asks, not sure if I missed this, but I would like to know how you analyzed the matrix. And we didn't specifically give you guidance about analyzing the matrix other than to say you go through the matrix process and then of identifying a comprehensive list of stakeholders and their potential roles. And then you and your team for the project would sit down as a group and go through those stakeholders and really think about who do we have to have at the table at what point in our process, and then develop your stakeholder engagement plan based on that. So it's really an important conversation to have with your different partners on the project, the team that's working on it. Let's go to Joanna from Retrack's question, which I'll post. She says, we're reviewing our M&E system, so am I right in thinking that we could use these tools to assess who needs what data and in which format, both internally and externally? Joanna, I think that's a great opportunity to use the stakeholder tools that we've presented today. This is exactly the right time. I think what often happens is the data producers, so the M&E people and the collection people, sit around a table and design an M&E system and figure out what data they're going to collect and what the indicators are, and not including, a broader audience of those data users. Who are the people who are actually going to use the data generated from that M&E system? So this is a perfect opportunity where you could go through this, because the more engaged they are in defining what their data needs are, the more you can be responsive to those needs, and then in the end, hopefully encourage and support use of those data. Tara wants to add something.
Joanna, also, you could combine the use of the stakeholder engagement and analysis matrix with an actual communication plan process. So there's guidance out there on the internet. I can't think of a good resource off the top of my head for developing communication plans that really help you target the information and identify what format it should be in. But a stakeholder analysis would be a great way to start that process.
And Drew Kolaris would like to add another point.
Yeah, Joanna, you clearly touched on an interesting subject since everybody from Measure wanted to hone in. I just wanted to put out there, it definitely when you're thinking about an M&E system, oftentimes, especially for a national M&E system, it's focusing on reporting at the sort of donor level or the higher level, and going through a stakeholder analysis process from the start will really ensure that the data being collected through your system is used at all of the different levels, and to understand what's the data traditionally that we've been collecting that might not necessarily be used or need to be collected anymore. So I think sometimes we often add indicators into an M&E system, and we rarely take the time to remove unnecessary indicators once they're in that system. So going through a stakeholder analysis process at the beginning is a good way to prioritize your data needs, and especially in limited funding for M&E, to prioritize what you do want to collect. Thanks.
Drew, we have quite a lot of questions, which is fantastic. It's great to see this level of engagement. We're hoping some of you are willing to stay on the line a little longer so we can take some more of your questions. So let me get to the next one. Maria says, is it possible to estimate proportion of planning time? Drew, do you want to go ahead and answer about how much time you've already Drew did say that, you know, you can do the stakeholder analysis matrix at a workshop setting in a couple of hours. You know, it doesn't have to take incredibly long. It seems like more of the work would really get to the engagement plan and working with stakeholders throughout your entire project. Do you have anything to add to that, Drew?
Yeah, sorry. It took me a second to get on the mic. No, that's exactly right. I think that the planning for the stakeholder analysis isn't a very time-consuming process, but realizing what will come out of that stakeholder analysis process will have serious time implications. So if every stakeholder wants a certain type of information or needs to be engaged at every level of the process, and that's certainly going to add a lot of time to your data collection or your data analysis or your project or activity in general. But I think that the tools that are available on the Measure Evaluation website are quite ready to use. I've almost always adapted them or modified them for every activity, but use for the most part the template that's available. So I think that if you start from there, you can quickly adapt and understand how they'll be best appropriate for your specific activity.
Thanks, Drew. Tara Nutley is going to take the next question from Olga, which is, what is your process for a scenario where you do not have quality data to start with for a decision-making process? I am interested in the methodology you are using for identifying the data that can be used in a meaningful way.
Great question, Olga. This actually gets us into talking about a different tool that we will be discussing, I believe, in 2 weeks on maybe it's February 14th. We can check. But so not having quality data is a problem. Not many people agree with me, though. I am of the mind that no matter what you got, you should use. And what happens in a process of sitting around and discussing what your information needs are, and then that the corresponding data is poor, really prompts that specific group of decision makers and data producers to get more interested, more motivated, more engaged in improving the quality of the data available to them. So if you remember on one of the slides, there was the cycle of data-informed decision making. There really is a linkage between use and demand. And if you're trying to use it and you realize it's poor quality, it does sort of prompt more investment in improving data quality. But to get back at the crux of your question, there is a tool called the Framework for Linking Data with Action. And what this tool facilitates is a conversation around a group of decision makers and M&E professionals, but particularly decision makers, around what their specific information needs are by programmatic questions. So you facilitate a discussion where you identify what your priority programmatic questions are, and then you can link the data that would inform those questions to that question. And here it allows you to hone in on a very specific and really limited data need so that you can don't have to sift through mounds and mounds of data kind of mining for findings. You target around what your question is, and then you go seek the data to inform that question. So we'll be talking in more detail about that tool in a couple of weeks.
So we're over time by a couple minutes, but we still have a lot of attendees, which tells me you're willing to hang on a little longer. If you need to go, that's fine. This will all be recorded, but we'd like to go ahead and have Drew take the next question from Paul and Dave. What are some of the let me make sure he can see that, though, because he is in London. What are some of the critical issues for stakeholder engagement when doing the timing of research from planning to report writing and publishing?
That is a great question, and you know, I think we could probably talk about this for another entire session, but I think that the most critical issue that we've used in defining the different stakeholders is when the results need to be used. So oftentimes the research that we've done has been less academic but more practical. So we need to know how much it costs to deliver services, or we need to understand a certain epidemiological factor so we can plan our next strategy or something like that. So I think that the first thing to do is identify when and how that data will be used, and then to work backwards from there. The report writing and the publishing obviously is, you know, the publication is an extremely important aspect of that, and I think that there is a whole different stakeholder engagement process about who's part of the study team and the publications and everything else. But from the practical research experiences that I've used, we've really started first with when do these data need to be available for which process and by which stakeholders will use it, and then we've worked backwards from there. And it comes to hard decisions that sometimes you can't do everything you want or collect all the data you want given the time frame, and you have to make some tough choices. But going through that process will help you make some evidence-based decisions about what should and shouldn't be included in your final research, and maybe that you need to do more research later on is the ultimate outcome of that.
Drew, the next question comes from Dana, and she asks, do you need to modify your approach to working with international stakeholders when you are based outside their country? I think you would use the same sort of approach. It's just how you engage them might change. You know, it may not be as easy to sit down face-to-face and do a meeting with them, so you would probably have to be creative in using different strategies such as technology like this, Adobe Connect or GoToMeeting, Skype, phone calls. But certainly now with telecommunications as they are, I think you can really do a great job of including stakeholders that are outside of the country as well. Let's go to Derek's question. Derek asks, I think, a very realistic question. He says, wondering who would focus on stakeholder engagement, tracking and follow-up in a project when we're so engrossed in implementation. Companies usually have a whole division dedicated to this properly. Drew, what has your experience been?
Well, you know, most of my work in using this has been supporting governments and national institutions. So for the most part, most of the ministries of health and the National AIDS Control Commissions that I work with, they do feel some sort of accountability to donor populations, to the partners who will then implement the strategies that they use. And there is, you know, increasing awareness and understanding that we need to be inclusive and taking participatory approaches to planning, from sector-wide analysis approaches and action plans to other processes. So for the most part, we've really tried to get the national institutions that we work with to take ownership over that stakeholder engagement process and to follow it through to the point that we've even put some of those activities into national action plans. So the National AIDS Control Commission in Rwanda, for instance, would have different times where they would go through and revisit their stakeholder groups on a certain activity or take it through. So I'm coming more from a public sector than a private sector or sort of a private project approach to engaging stakeholders. But ultimately, I think it's the person that's leading that activity that has the responsibility. So if it's a research study, then as the principal investigator or the research lead, then you really have a responsibility to make sure that all of the different stakeholders are involved and followed through in that process if you really do want those results to be used, which is really the point of why we're doing all of this.
Thanks, Drew. We have just a couple more questions. Maria asks, well, she says, given that stakeholders are as varied as the interests, does this then require that we have several meetings to engage the differing types, e.g. NGOs, government authorities versus beneficiaries? That's a great question, Maria, and I think a lot is going to depend on your individual context and situation. I think, you know, initially it's good to have some separate meetings or conversations with stakeholder groups to understand what their needs are and their interests are in terms of data and what their potential roles could be. Sometimes in a large setting, you may not get all of the same types of responses that you would get when you talk to people individually. That said, we certainly have the realistic factor, you know, of how much time you have to actually do that and discuss those things. There's also value to bringing them all together in one place so that some of these differences can come out and you can facilitate a conversation around, okay, we have a lot of different types of interests and data needs, but how do we move together and prioritize what those would be? So I think it really depends on your context and skill in facilitation as well. Let's take the next question. Well, I'm sorry, Taryn Nutley has something to add.
Yeah, I just also want to kind of comment on the flip side of what Molly just mentioned. I was involved in a large research activity where we were looking at a new way to deliver injectable contraceptives at the community level. We were using lay health workers to do this. And so the study was the engagement of providers, clinic-based providers that were already providing injectable contraceptives was critical. Now, mind you, there were probably 2,000 of them in the country. So we couldn't really get them all in a room, and engaging them face-to-face regularly would have been overwhelming. So as we were doing our stakeholder engagement plan, we came up with ways to inform them through bulletins, newsletters, announcements in the there was a little publication that went out to health providers every quarter. We provided kind of that information through different non-face-to-face mechanisms. And then yearly, these providers convened by region for technical update meetings. And then it was there that we were able to have a face-to-face discussion. So we also maximized on existing meetings that brought people together. And we also timed the launch of the study around one of these annual meetings so that we could introduce the study to the providers and have a little bit of Q&A before we even started it. So there's multiple ways you can do these things that aren't overwhelming.
Thank you, Tara. The next question, Drew, is for you. How did you decide to portray your data in an engaging way for data users when designing the pamphlets?
Thanks, Eric, for that question. I think that we throughout this was a part of a three-day workshop, and we had several different sections on data presentation and what's the most meaningful and interesting way to present data, whether that be through tables, through graphs, through different ways, and even we did some sessions on how to interpret data. And as you know, because you're also a specialist here, Measure Evaluation has some great tools, including the seven steps that Tara mentioned earlier, that can help you understand the most appropriate ways to present data for different audiences. And so for instance, in that brochure, looking at the OVC data, they thought that it was important for the different districts to be able to compare how those data look across. So they decided that a graph of just different bars by district was the most appropriate way to go through that process.
Okay, we just have two more questions. This next one is from Maria. I'm not sure I completely follow the question, so bear with me if we're not answering it correctly. But you're saying you're talking from a perspective where you're involved in specifically strengthening HMIS systems in Somalia. So you're trying to understand the practical side of engaging stakeholders. I think if I understand you correctly, you're talking about HMIS, which is much bigger than, let's say, a programmatic M&E system. And so sort of what is the role and reality of engaging stakeholders in such a large national level system. So I think that, you know, you would need to add time in for sure to work with the relevant stakeholders, and hopefully there already is a process underway in Somalia where the different stakeholders in the various categories that we laid out in our stakeholder analysis matrix have already been engaged. If not, it would be useful to perhaps use that tool to meet with some of the developers and those involved in strengthening the HMIS system to sit down and review and go through that systematic process of, gosh, is there anybody we've actually left out of this process while we're developing HMIS? And Tara has something that she'd like to add.
Yeah, and once again, Maria, we're not sure of exactly what's happening in your context, but I'm assuming that there was some sort of an assessment done if you're involved in strengthening the system so you understand where the weaknesses are. So that's the way, one way that you could, if you haven't really, you know, systematically involved stakeholders or in any kind of systematic way in your process, you could start through the weaknesses that have been identified through some sort of an RHIS assessment and start from there.
And we'll take our last question. Drew, how about you talk about maybe your experience? How did you determine what level of engagement and analysis was enough in your examples?
Yeah, that's a really great question, Felicia, and I don't think there is a hard and fast answer. It was kind of the mainstay of all my answers. It goes back to how do we think the data want to be used and when do we want that data to be used. So I think that once we've exhausted all of the different ways that we think that the data could be useful through a midterm review of a strategy or through a research study, that's when we kind of determine when is enough. Now, of course, you can continue to go on to, you know, the international community and the development community. So sometimes you do have to limit yourself to the people that are directly involved and will be engaged from the start of that process. So for instance, in Rwanda for the midterm review, the stakeholders that we wanted to engage were those who were willing to participate and said, yes, I will give you this amount of days from the start to beginning of this activity. So they were part of the smaller group of this joint review steering committee that said that I'll be part of this and I'll go to my weekly meetings and be committed to the deliverables of the process, whereas other stakeholders were more analyzed or identified in an end user perspective of the overall results. So I think that it's really a negotiation between your time and your resources and what you really want to get out of that process. Thanks.
Thanks, Drew. April writes, let me make sure everyone can see it. Drew, I think the brochure you shared as an example of data dissemination is a great example of sharing a summary of the data with certain stakeholders. However, some stakeholders want to do their own analysis of data and would prefer to have access to the raw data de-identified. In your experience, how often are government clinics, high-level offices, and/or international NGOs willing to share raw data de-identified with other stakeholders rather than limiting the data sharing to a summary report?
Thanks, April, for that question. It's quite spot on, and I guess I've been relatively lucky in that most of my experience has been in Rwanda, which has a strong data sharing culture. There's a lot of national databases that were even designed with stakeholders as part of the stakeholder access or end user data access as a real objective for revising national databases and promoting data availability. So the experiences that I've had so far in terms of national data from for a midterm review, for example, have been that people have been quite forthcoming to provide that raw data. Some of the publicly funded work through USAID, for instance, all of the DHS demographic and health surveys, all of their data sets, raw data, are available online to the Measure DHS website. And I think that especially data that's owned by the government, just engaging them from the beginning in the project and saying, you know, so that they understand why you want the data and how you use that data, and making sure that they are part of that process from the beginning is a great way to facilitate or foster data sharing at all those levels. Thanks.
Thanks, Drew. I believe we've gotten through all of our questions, so we'll just wrap up very quickly with a couple final slides. If the host could make the presentation larger, you can see the link again to our resources where you'll find our Data Demand and Use Toolkit and also our training resources. As a reminder, our next webinar is on Tuesday, February 7th, again at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and it will be on PRISM. And Natasha Kanaget will be presenting that for us. To join Data Usenet, this is a community of practice around data demand and use. It has a variety of information that comes out, for example, announcements of these webinars, various discussions, job postings, pretty much anything that's happening around data demand and use. You can just follow the instructions on this slide by sending an email to listserv@unc.edu and then just leaving the subject field blank and in the body of the message type subscribe Data Usenet. And then you can go ahead and start receiving messages. Tara has something to add?
And Data Usenet is an excellent way to stay connected to the larger community of professionals, no matter what your discipline, to these issues of data use. And it's just emails. It's not any sort of overwhelming amount. We might send two out a month, perhaps three. So please join. We encourage it.
Okay, and just for your reference, we have our contact information here, Molly, Tara, and Drew. So feel free to email any of us if you have specific questions. And thanks again to the presenters and for all of the participants. This was one of our best discussions. We had fantastic questions, really thoughtful and insightful comments. So we really appreciate it and hopefully look forward to seeing many of you on one of our other webinars. Have a great day.